If you would, be opening your Bibles to 1 Timothy. We're going to look at a passage that is in 1 Timothy and then another passage that is in 1 Corinthians as a part of the series that we have just begun, where we are asking questions. Actually, you are asking the questions, and I'm trying to provide biblical answers. We're doing a series that is called What Does the Bible Say About? And we've just asked for a multitude of cards to be turned in. And that, in fact, has happened. Many people have turned in cards, and so I'm just trying to put those in some kind of a logical or semi-logical order as we present these lessons. What we're going to find out is a lot of that's going to be dependent on some of the questions are very difficult. Some of the passages are difficult, and if we're not careful, some of the passages are passages that maybe we have seen a certain way, but what we're trying to answer is trying to define exactly what does the Bible say, so that we can decide exactly what we do in regards to any of these passages. I don't think the passage that we're going to look at tonight is an extremely easy passage, though I do believe all the information is certainly there for our gathering. I want you to read with me, if you would, out of 1 Timothy chapter 2. And we certainly appreciate so much everybody being here this evening that is here. Glad that the Lord has blessed us all with safety to be here. It doesn't look like it's going to be the most pleasant of evenings again at some point before the evening's up weather-wise. And so we certainly hope and pray that it's not severe, and that we all have an opportunity to return home safely this evening as well. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, and we actually looked at a part of this passage just recently where God is in fact giving instruction from Paul to Timothy about things that he ought to be preaching regarding. And we talked about the passage that deals with the idea of modesty from the inside out, what kind of people God would expect us to be. And we talked about what that would carry on over to in regards to the way we presented ourselves to other people, that godly people would carry forth a godly presentation. But in that same passage, where he had started off in verse 8 talking about that he desires that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. And then we talked a little bit about those next couple of verses, 9 and 10, and talked about the modesty. I want to pick up in verse 11 because we had a question turned in about 1 Timothy chapter 2 as well as 1 Corinthians chapter 14. I want you to read with me, if you would, a couple of verses out of this passage. Verse 11 starting, "Let a woman learn in silence with all submission. And I do not permit a woman to teach or have authority over a man, but to be in silence." And then he's going to give his reasoning for that. We're not going to really deal with the reasoning of that tonight, but he just indicates that God had a certain order of creation, and he chose that order of creation. And why? He just doesn't tell us why. He just says Adam was formed first, and then Eve. And then he indicates something about the temptation and the deception that goes along with that. I want you to keep yourself marked there, or at least keep that passage in your mind, if you would, and turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 14. 1 Corinthians chapter 14, and in particular, verse 34. We read, "Let your women keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but they are to be submissive, as the law also says." Now, here's what I want to do with that. I want to look at both of those verses, and I want to look at it this way. What it does not say, and what God would have us to understand out of that passage, and then looking at, in fact, what it does say, because the question was asked, what exactly does that mean? What does God intend when he gives that instruction? Because we've heard all kinds of different things associated with that. But I think if you look at the passage and the context of the passage, that it's not that difficult to understand the main points that God is wanting to make. The question ends up being, what does that mean? Are women forbidden to speak? And if they are forbidden to speak, are there occasions in which they're forbidden and other occasions which they are not? Or is that not even the case? Are women, in fact, forbidden to teach, or are they not forbidden to teach? What exactly is it that God is saying? And I would tell you this, that I think that both of these passages, when we get down to what they do say, are going to help us to understand something about a Greek method of writing, because that's obviously the way the New Testament was written. But there's a Greek method of writing that is, in fact, a way of making comparison. And God uses that in both of these sections. In other words, there are qualifications associated with both statements that are made. And it's important to recognize and to understand those qualifications. I want you to turn to a couple of other passages with me as we answer some things, because clearly, if you turn to Titus chapter 2, Titus chapter 2, the question regarding the idea of, are women forbidden to teach? Well, that certainly cannot be the case. Because Titus chapter 2, very specifically, starting in verse 3, says the older women likewise that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. It says that the older women are clearly intended to be teachers of good things. This passage indicates that they are specifically teaching the younger women in this particular passage. But if you look at Colossians chapter 3, in Colossians chapter 3, and verse 16, a passage that we understand deals with the concept of singing, but verse 16 says, "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord." So whatever kind of teaching is, and that's even teaching within an assembly, as we're looking at. And so he's clearly not forbidding the concept of teaching in that particular setting. In Acts chapter 18, if you'll remember about Priscilla and Aquila, then you no longer have just an older woman teaching a younger woman, but very specifically, she is mentioned first in that context, and it says, they pulled Apollos aside, and they taught him the way more perfectly. So there's a scenario in which she, in fact, could be teaching, even teaching that involved her teaching a man. I'm not sure why that passage, that wouldn't be typical, I can tell you, to mention her first as opposed to him, but it does. It mentions her first. That may be because she may have had more experience or more knowledge in that particular area. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, turn back there if you would, or back to 2 Timothy this time, chapter 2. This is kind of an interesting statement, and this helps to show us why word studies sometimes are helpful and important. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, and in verse 2, we read, as Paul's writing to Timothy a second time, "In the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." That's kind of an interesting statement. Because the word that is used there, the Greek word that is used there in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2 is anthropos. It is a generic word. It isn't gender specific. It is the same word that is used when Jesus in Matthew chapter 4 and verse 4 was tempted by Satan. Jesus used the same word, anthropos, when he said, "Man shall not live by bread alone." That word is a reference to mankind. I think 2 Timothy is for Timothy to be instructing everybody to fulfill their roles, which involved all of them teaching in some capacity. And I think that's what he's saying. If you look at vines, or you look at the theological dictionaries that are available, if you look at Thayer's Greek lexicon, they will all tell you the word aner in the Greek, aner, is never used of female. It's used of male only. But the word anthropos is used, in fact, of mankind. It's the same word that the Septuagint translates, the Septuagint, the Greek version of the Old Testament, translates from back in Genesis when it says he created man, male and female, he created them, and he calls them man or mankind. And so the statement in Timothy, I think, is even a command involving that women are, in fact, to be teaching. In what capacity? I think he'll give us some qualifiers, some things to help us understand that. But it goes on in that passage to help us to understand. So in other words, what does it say in 1 Timothy chapter 2? Turn back there with me again if you would. It starts off saying, let a woman learn in silence with all submission. The word silence is interesting there because we're going to see that word show up in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, but it's a different word in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. The word that is used in 1 Timothy chapter 2 is, in fact, the Greek word heisoukia. It is the Greek word that is used there, which is translated silence in 1 Timothy chapter 2, but in fact is not always translated that way. It is a word that means quietness. It means to rest, to cease from labor, to lead a quiet life. That is the way that that word is used. It is used in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 12, where it says, now those who are such, we command and exhort through our Lord Jesus Christ, that they work in quietness and eat their own bread. That's what they're told in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. Same word. Heisoukia is the word that's used in both places. Translated silence in one place, translated quietness in another place. I think specifically 2 Timothy is talking about the demeanor of the women. I think that's what Timothy is dealing with. And I think it's important to recognize in Timothy, this is not a reference to a public assembly. Timothy's not dealing with an assembly. He's talked about men praying and men being holy. He's talked about women dressing and themselves modestly. He's talking about from the inside out. He says, which is proper for women professing godliness. In other words, she's to dress herself with good works as indicating that. I don't think that he's dealing with a public assembly. Paul says, you need to have the right demeanor. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, he says, when you're an employee, understand that you're an employee. You're not the boss. That's basically what he's saying in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. He says, you in fact need to work in quietness. In other words, don't assume a position of authority that's not yours. Act the way an employee should respond, is what he's telling them in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. And so he's saying, if you in fact are working for somebody, you have somebody that is positioned over you. Paul's not saying, you know what, you're not equal. You're not equal with the person that is your boss. He's not saying that, because you are. We're all equal. We understand that. What he's saying is you don't have the same role as the person who is your boss. They've got a role. You've got a role. You need to act your role, he's just saying. Your role in that particular case is quietness. In other words, not taking a position that in fact does not belong to you. He says you don't possess, therefore you don't assume an equal role with the person that you would be working for. Work in quietness with the right demeanor, showing people what a Christian who is a worker would be demonstrating. He goes on to say, and I do not permit a woman to teach, in verse 12, or to have authority over a man, but to be in quietness, he's saying again. Titus is told on one occasion to rebuke, it says, with all authority. That's exactly what she is being told that she's not to do. The word that is translated there, teach, is the word didasko. The word in the Greek that means to hold a discourse with, in order to instruct or deliver didactic discourses. I know that's one of those definitions that you think, I'm not sure I understand why they even wrote that. But that's saying that a person who is standing up, who is taking the authoritative role, who is standing before a group of people and is giving a discourse in order to instruct or to teach them. So what I'm doing presently would be considered giving a didactic discourse. I'm standing before, and he's saying that he's given specific roles regarding that idea. In Matthew chapter 4, it says of Jesus that he went about teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel. That word teaching in the synagogue, same word again. It's that word didasko. It's the idea of carrying forth an authority, demonstrating that you're in the position of authority with that instruction. The word that he's using for the women in verse 12 is exactly that. He's saying, I do not permit a woman to, and he says, to take that role, that she is to step out of the role that God has given. It's not an equality issue. It's not an intelligence issue. It's not anything else. It's the same as when God says, not all men serve the same role in a congregation. We certainly understand that concept because we are about to go through a process of selecting elders. I am not an elder in this congregation, but we have three elders. And God says, you are not in their role. There are a lot of others that are not in their role. And it says that I am, in fact, as a member of the congregation, to submit to their authority, to their leadership, to their role. I'm equal with all three of them as far as before God, before the throne of God. But he's saying we have different roles. That's what he's doing the same way with men and women. He's saying God has established different roles within his church for both men and for women. He says, in fact, she is not to have authority. The word comes from authenteo in the Greek. It literally means to govern one, to exercise dominion over. The New King James says not to teach or to have authority. Some of the older versions say, in fact, she's not to usurp authority. Usurp is not really a good word to describe the Greek word there. Usurp carries the idea of taking without permission. So, and the reason I mention that is because it doesn't make any difference whether or not a person yields that to them. It's not whether they take something from me without permission. It's the fact that God says that's not the role that he has established to begin with. It isn't just a matter of usurping, it's a matter of exercising that authority. And that's, in fact, what the versions say. If you look at Thayer's Greek lexicon, it says to exercise authority on one's account, one's own account, to domineer over, to have authority or domineer over somebody is what Vine's Expository Dictionary says. So what it's indicating in 1 Timothy chapter 2 is, that whatever he is dictating to her, I think he's very specifically talking about the demeanor, the role that she's supposed to have. That she is not to take a position of authoritative teaching in this particular case he's talking about over the man. But rather she's to, and he uses that word again, but rather in silence or quietness. A submissive role as far as that is concerned. That's not an equality issue. And let me just throw in just a side issue here. And I'll tell you, this is more important than we want to make this out to be sometimes. At what age does a boy become a man? I think we get confused on that sometimes as to whether or not a woman can be teaching a boy because he has been baptized into Jesus Christ. The Spirit called Jesus a boy at 12. Not me. I didn't call him that. The Spirit called Jesus a boy at 12. That's the word that is used. You remember when his parents left him behind in the temple? They forgot him. The Spirit said, and the boy, the child, the young one, not the man, Jesus. I think that it isn't the nature of whether or not one has been baptized. God is setting up a role relationship that exists across the board here. I think he's talking about what is intended to be in the relationship between these two as they are in the Lord's body, not just in a public assembly, because Timothy's not even being told about a public assembly. He's being told about the way she should, in fact, the kind of demeanor that she ought to have under all circumstances. Now, let me take you to 1 Corinthians 14. We'll come back and make a point or two about that. 1 Corinthians chapter 14. And then we'll talk about a couple of those things. Because in 1 Corinthians 14, it even seems like it is being more definitive about what is to happen and what is not. But I think we may miss the mark on this one as well sometimes. In verse 34, let your women keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but they are to be submissive, as the law also says. Couple of key phrases in there to understand. The keep silent is a different word here. This is not that word that means quietness. This is literally a word which means silent, as in button the lip. You know, when you're telling your child, don't say anything else. That's exactly what's being used here. This is not saying, I need you to quiet down a little bit. This is saying, button it. Don't say anything. It's a word for silent. It is sigao. It is the Greek word that means silent here. Here's the question. And here's why you need to be careful with what you say about this particular verse. Because if you'll back up into verse 28, and it's talking about the man who's speaking in tongues, But if there is no interpreter, let him keep silent in church, and let him speak to himself and to God. Now, what does that mean? Because whatever word is, whatever is being said of her is being said of him as well. That is the same word. That is the word, again, thigao. He is being told that he needs to be silent, speaking only to himself and to God if there's no interpreter there. Or if you drop down a little bit further into verse 30, and it's talking about men who are receiving prophecy. And it says, in fact, but if anything is revealed to another who sits by, let the first keep silent. In other words, let him not let him speak either. But speak in what way? What exactly is it saying about this? The word speak is from laeo in the Greek, and it literally means to speak. Problem with it is that it's the same word that's used in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 19, where it says speaking to one another. Colossians 3, talking about singing, says teaching one another. Ephesians 5:19 says speaking to one another. Colossians 3 uses the same word for teaching, and then Ephesians chapter 5 uses the same word for speaking. What are they? Are those commands both to men only, do you think? In other words, only men are to sing to each other? Or is that a command across the board? The issue is not whether or not there is a forbidding of an utterance, or whether there's a forbidding of an ability to teach at all. If that was the case, then how could she sing? Or do we feel that she can't sing? Is that what the passage is indicating, that is to be a men-only thing? How could she confess Jesus Christ as her Lord before she was baptized into Jesus Christ? How could she confess her public sins? And I know this sounds trivial. I would ask you this. If she cannot speak, in other words, not make an utterance, could she tell her children to be quiet during services? Could she lean over and ask her children a question? Could she lean over and give her children instruction? If the idea is silent in the sense of not speaking at all, could she say amen? You know, if you turn back to Nehemiah chapter 8, because Paul's going to say in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, he said, as the law says. In other words, she is to be bound here the same way as the law says. And I think he's actually referring all the way back to Genesis, probably Genesis chapter 3, where he's dealing with the idea of God's role relationship and how he created man and woman. Because I think the subject here is the submission to, not the physical speaking or utterance. In Nehemiah chapter 8, it talks about the reading of the law. And you remember they hadn't read the law for quite a while because the people hadn't been following God. But as you read through chapter 8, verses 2 through 6, what you're going to find out is, and it says, and all, it talked about, it was read in the hearing of all who could understand, both male and female, all who could understand. And then it went on to say, and all the congregation said amen in that public assembly with Ezra the priest leading that. So you've got Ezra, in fact, reading the word to the people and the entire congregation responding. And that's what it says. The whole congregation responded amen. Here's what I want you to look at, because I think here is the key. I talked about, and I mentioned that there's a method, a Greek method of indicating comparative degree, and that's exactly what's happening in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. Now, I think if you want to truly understand 1 Corinthians 14, there's a principle being applied here, and you have to go all the way back to chapter 11 to understand that. In chapter 11, when he's setting up role relationship, Paul says, in fact, in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, says, I want you, in verse 3, I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Talking about the Father. He's setting up role relationship. We know that John testified in John 1:1 that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Speaking of Jesus Christ. We know that from verse 14. That Jesus came and dwelt among us. So John says that the Father and the Son are in fact absolutely, totally equal as far as God is concerned. That's what John says. The Father and the Son are equally God. They do not have the same role. They do not have the same roles. He says, even though they are totally equal as God, they are both completely God. Jesus isn't less deity than the Father. They are equal as far as the deity is concerned. That's what John says. But Paul told the Corinthians, God is the head over Christ. That's a role relationship. You remember Jesus himself saying, I don't do anything except what my Father has sent me to do. Not because he wasn't also equally God, but because he had a subjective role in the relationship. That's what he's saying. So that's the principle that is starting all of this. And then keep in mind, secondly, the context of 1 Corinthians 14. It is a problem with the Corinthian brethren, particularly showing off their spiritual gifts. That's the incident that in fact stimulates the writing of 1 Corinthians chapter 14. It didn't matter which one. You had tongue speakers and they were proud that they could speak in tongues. But what God said was, if you can speak in a foreign tongue and there's nobody to interpret it, what is the purpose of that gift other than to be showy? In other words, if I could stand up and preach this entire sermon in German or Mandarin Chinese or something, I mean, people may think, wow, didn't know he could speak Mandarin. But if you didn't understand Mandarin, what would be the point of speaking it other than to show you that I could speak it? That's what he's telling the tongue speakers. He's saying, if there isn't somebody to interpret the message, why speak it? He says, in fact, keep silent. Regarding what? Regarding everything? Could that tongue speaker not pray? No, he wasn't telling me he couldn't pray. He's saying, you can't speak in tongues. Don't speak in tongues if there's nobody to interpret. A prophet, he said, there were qualifications. He said, only two or three prophets, period, in an assembly. Only a couple or three were to prophesy. But he said, in fact, if one was prophesying, if I had a word to give to people and I was prophesying, and he said, and God gave the man next to me a prophecy as well that he was going to deliver. He said, in fact, I need to sit down and be quiet so that he can, in fact, get up and speak. Why? He says, because if not, what's the message? Imagine if I called somebody up here beside me and said, you know what? David, why don't you come up here? We'll preach a sermon at the same time. You preach the sermon you're going to preach. I'm going to preach the sermon I'm going to preach. God would say, what is the point of that? Who will understand what's going on? He says, God's not the author of confusion. And so he says, tell that prophet to quit talking. In what way? Could that prophet not pray? Could that prophet not sing? Could that prophet not still ask questions or answer questions in regards to that? Sure he could. But he was told in regards to the prophecy, be silent. In verse 34, he says to the woman, he says, in fact, let your women keep silent in the churches, for they're not permitted to speak, but that in fact is that comparative degree method that the Greeks use. Now, as you're looking at verse 34, in the New King James, they are is in italics. We've talked about that before. That's not in the original at all. The translators have put that in there because they think that it helps. I would tell you, I don't think that it does help. Let your women keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but to be submissive. That's that comparative degree statement that is used. That is used in several different places in the Scriptures. There are other places where that is, in fact, used exactly the same way. And it is always the qualifier that is the important thing that's being focused on. The fact that it's qualified does not negate entirely what was said. It's saying there's a comparative degree here. Here's an example of that. In fact, we are told in John chapter 6 and verse 27, in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 3 specifically, it says, labor not for meat that perishes, but for everlasting life. Exact same method in the Greek. That's the way they wrote. The question would be, so what is God saying? He says, labor not for meat that perishes. So in other words, is he saying, you can't work for food? That's not what he's saying. He's saying, labor not for meat that perishes, but for everlasting life. He's saying, this is what you're supposed to be doing, not this. He's not saying you can't labor for meat. He's saying, labor not for meat, but rather for everlasting life. He's saying this is the important thing. He's doing the exact same thing in 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 34. He's saying, in fact, that she is not to speak but be submissive. What does that mean? Now, I would tell you, now it really, you know, because people debate heavily whether that's the prophet's wives in verse 34 or women in general. I would tell you it really isn't going to make much difference, though I think the issue was the prophet's wives here. I think that was the issue, at least, that was at hand. Because they were showing off their gifts, what was happening was that there were women who were also standing up and giving their discourses to the congregation, or standing up and throwing out the questions in an authoritative way to those that were doing the speaking. And he's saying that that's outside the role. That's outside the role that he intended them to be in. He intended them to be, in fact, in a submissive role. Clearly, Aquila and Priscilla taught, but whatever she did didn't violate who she was supposed to be. Clearly, women are to sing. And so the question comes up, well, what about Bible class? It's different in Bible class than it is in the assembly, right? So here's what I would ask. 1 Timothy, first off, isn't dealing with an assembly in any way, shape, or form. 1 Corinthians chapter 14, some people will rely on the fact that it says when the whole church comes together. In other words, verse 26 says, how is it then, brethren, whenever you come together, the idea is that the whole church, we miss the point. He's talking about, that's what establishes. Verse 26, he's saying, as opposed to when you're separate, you come together. I don't think God set up a means or a way of dealing with things that made a public assembly, in the sense of the group coming all together in one room, which is never the whole church. As far as I know, in the 16 years that I've been here, we've never had the whole church assembled together. I'm saying the whole congregation at Nashua. That's not the point. He's just talking about assembled in a general fashion. That still, all the rules that apply to the man being in the position of leadership in that assembly, whether it's a Bible class or it's an assembly, is the same. I don't think we would say, let's suppose you had a Bible class. In a Bible class setting, in other words, is it okay for women to speak in a Bible class because that's a different setting? I would ask you this, would it be okay then for the tongue speaker to speak in a Bible class if there was no interpreter? Would it be okay for two prophets to speak at once in a Bible class? In other words, is there a different set of rules? I don't think that's what he's saying. I think he's saying that women are to fulfill their role, which is not the role of leadership and didactic discourses taking the lead in that particular instance. As a matter of fact, in one particular occasion in Acts chapter 5, even though you don't like the results of it, or she didn't like the results of it, Peter specifically asked, in an assembly of the Christians there, specifically asked a woman to speak. You remember Ananias and Sapphira? They came into that assembly and they were specifically asked questions. Her, separate from him. And they responded to those questions. Because the response to a question is not, in fact, a violation of what is being described as her submissive role here. Let me read to you a quote out of an article that was written by Robert Turner. I think he does a good job of at least dealing with this concept. He says, man's dominion over woman is not limited to in-church assembly. In fact, I fear in assembly has become a realm for validating and or negating, almost as if it was a congregational consistory. What makes a gathering of saints? See, he says, what makes a gathering of saints? The assembly. In other words, what makes, when we come together, what makes one gathering the assembly and something else not the assembly, is what he's saying. He says, and where would we get that information? How many members does it take to have a quorum? Are we to understand that if there is less than the whole church come together, which is out of 1 Corinthians 14, verse 23, says, are we to understand that if there is less than the whole church, that it would have been all right for men to speak at the same time or for women to speak? God authorizes saints to do certain things together and warns us about forsaking our own assembling. But the reference is to coming together of ourselves, the act of gathering, not some official validating quorum. Does that make sense, what he's saying? He's saying, whatever he intended to be in his people in an assembled group would apply across the board. whether it's a Bible class or whether it's an assembly. The 1 Corinthians 14 is saying, in all of those cases, there is to be a submissiveness. Can she sing? Absolutely. Can she speak? Well, in what form? Can she confess the name of Christ before a group? I think absolutely. We would agree with that. So the passage can't mean she can't say anything. It's saying she cannot take the position of authority and didactic discourses and be the teacher. I would tell you that's the same whether she's standing up here or it's from her seat. She is to remain in the role that God has given. It isn't an issue of can she speak at all. The passage is dealing with, in both cases, the passage is dealing with a principle of role relationship and of submission as it is intended. And so whether we are, as according to 1 Timothy, I would tell you that's why that's important. What position can she have of authority over whom? Does she lose that position because a boy, has been baptized into Christ? Would we have an issue at all? Because the passage says she cannot teach nor exercise authority. Not just teach over. Teach nor exercise authority over. After class is over. Could she stop that young boy, even though he's been baptized into Christ, because he's running down the hallway and tell him, don't run in the hallway? I think she could. I don't think she's overstepping her bounds in any way, shape, or form, because I think that any adult woman has authority over any of the young children as far as that is regarded. He's talking about in 1 Timothy across the board, her whole demeanor. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, he's talking about she is not, the context would say, she is not to take that position of authoritative teaching. That's what he's telling her. She can sing. She can respond. We do that regularly. Could I ask a woman when I was making announcements, if I was making announcements tonight and didn't have the information, could I ask one of the women, say, tell me again, when is your surgery? Could she respond to that in an assembled group? Yeah, because I don't think that's in any way stepping outside of the role that God has given. That's different than her taking a position of leadership for that. And that has nothing to do with knowledge. Nothing to do at all with knowledge. There's no question in my mind. As long as I've been a Christian, as long as I've been preaching, no question in my mind that if you were to put us to a test, Old Testament knowledge, my wife has considerably more than I do. She remembers those characters and those names and so many of those events so much better than I do. It isn't an issue of knowledge. It's an issue of God saying there are roles to fill. There are relationships that we have. And he says, I did this, and he gave in 1 Timothy for a reason. He said, I created Adam first, and I created Eve second. I can't answer why. But he says, I did. That's the order that I gave things. And so there's role relationship to be filled. I think he's saying women are, in fact, to fulfill their role as men are to fulfill their role across the board in an assembly, out of an assembly. He says, in fact, that we can do that. It's not an issue of, can she speak? Yes, she can speak. Can she, in fact, teach? Not only can she's commanded to teach. You just have to look at the circumstances and as to what role she fills in that regard. If you have any questions about that, be happy to entertain any of those at any time. But I think that's what that passage teaches. And make sure you keep that within the context of what is said within those passages, because whatever is being said in 1 Corinthians 14 to the women, whatever is being said to them is also being said to the tongue speaker and to the prophet. There's no way to separate those. The same exact phrase is used of all three of them. I think that's because all three of them are qualified. They've got qualifiers. We don't have the liberty of placing a period in a sentence where God didn't place a period. We don't have the liberty of making an absolute negative out of something that God has made a limited negative. And I think that's what he's done with teaching. The tongue speaker, he had to be silent, but regarding what? Tongue speaking. The prophet had to be silent, but regarding what? His prophecy. The woman had to be silent, but regarding what? Specifically the teaching that he was talking about. Let her therefore learn at home. Let her ask her husband, it says. And that's why I think specifically he's talking about the wives of these prophets. But I think it wouldn't matter. The role is still being set up the same. I know we haven't talked at all about coming to Jesus Christ. That's, matter of fact, this is one. If you're visiting with us, this is one of those odd lessons because we're in a series, and not all the questions are the things that are foremost in all of our minds. But that was foremost in somebody's mind. That's why they put forth that particular card. If you're not a Christian, we would love nothing more, and I know the Lord would love nothing more than to see you become one. That's what His desire is. So we hope that we can help you do that. If you don't know how, talk to us. We'd love to share with you because we understand. All we are is a group of people that have been forgiven of our sins by Jesus Christ and by God. That's a great thing. That's the grace of God. But I didn't do it on my own. He did it in spite of me. And that's what's great, because Jesus came to die for everybody, regardless of who we are, what we've done in our lives. If we can help you respond to God's call, we hope you'll let us do that. For those of us that are Christians, may we continue to study His Word. May we make sure to stand on what He says, but not beyond what He says. If we can help you respond, let us know as we stand and sing.